So now let's just dive in a little bit deeper, see kind of what the fathers say. So John, as we said, relates that the disciples fail to grasp the prophetic significance of Jesus' entry, okay, and they point out the parallel to the earlier act of the cleansing of the temple. So we've kind of already talked about the fact that this misunderstanding is kind of prevalent through John's gospel. Saint Cyril adds that after the resurrection, the disciples ceased to suffer from the blindness of the Jewish leaders, meaning the scripture was opened up to them just as it was to the disciples on the road to Emmaus. So their mind was then opened up to the scriptures. All right. Saint John offers a reason for this delay in the full revelation to the disciples, and I thought this was kind of interesting. It would have offended the disciples if he, being a king, were about to suffer such things and be betrayed. Besides, they could not at once have taken in the knowledge of the kingdom which he spoke, for they thought the words spoken revealed the kingdom of this world. So Saint John Chrysostom is saying the disciples were, and this was kind of what Judas, we believe that Judas suffered from, is they were expecting a Messiah who was going to ride in on a white charger and was going to free them from occupation, the new Moses, all right? And so Saint John Chrysostom is saying that they would not be able to hear these things now, so he had to bring them along and then later reveal this to them. So, you know, not to say that that's necessarily true, obviously, but I think that that's an interesting perspective, you know, because some people can ask, well, why didn't they, you know, why didn't Jesus just tell them, you know, reveal, open up their mind to scriptures so that they didn't have to, you know, worry about, you know, why is he going to his death and he's doing these confusing things? Just let him know right off. So he offers up this this explanation, and probably in our own lives, we have been party to situations where it wasn't best to tell the whole story at once, right? You know, you're telling somebody something and you want to reveal it to them, but if you tell them like the whole story, you know, it could be devastating, right? And so you kind of bring it out slowly, right? Okay. And then they can absorb a little bit of it, and then you kind of give it to them, you know. I'm kind of reminded of, you know, you have the classic one that I know of is, you know, a family member passes away, you know, and you call them on the phone and you say, oh, hi, Debbie, your dad's dead, you know. So you kind of, you know, you don't say that. You kind of introduce it slowly to kind of, you know, get them warmed up to that. You know, we can apply this in our real lives and have an understanding for this. All right. In verses 17 through 19, okay, therefore the people who were with him when he called Lazarus out of the tomb bore witness, okay. These verses contain this idea of continuing witness, okay, to the joy of the witnesses and the exasperation of the Pharisees. All right. Thus, these two verses can be seen as a repeat of the pattern that were in 9 and 11. So let's take a look at 9 and 11 then. Think this is it. So earlier in chapter 12, in 9:11, we have when the great crowd of the Jews learned that he was here, okay, that Jesus was here, they came not only because of Jesus, but also to see Lazarus, whom they raised from the dead. So here's that crowd again. All right. So he's taking us back to that, to that same crowd that has now witnessed this event. And now he's adding in here that the crowd that had been with him now was continuing to testify or was offering their witness. So he's adding that now, that dimension to that of the they're not just coming to see him, but now they're also witnessing now to the other to the people there. All right. Okay. Note also that in John's gospel, the Pharisees respond to the crowd joyfully, okay, receiving joyfully receiving Christ, different from Matthew and Mark, both in timing and degree, because in Mount, and we talked about this early when we talked about the cleansing of the temple, in Mark and Matthew, he comes in to Jerusalem riding the colt, and then he goes and he cleanses the temple. In John's gospel, he cleansed the temple back in chapter two. All right, so there's a seeming disagreement in terms of timing. All right, and we talked about that whole thing of, are there two events? Is John just John is not as concerned about the chronology, and that he wants to present more the theology of Jesus, is not worried about the chronology. So there's a couple of different things that we talked about there. All right. But here with Mark and Matthew's account, we can better understand or grasp this exasperation on the part of the Pharisees, because we have the Pharisees plotting after the resurrection of Lazarus, that they say, okay, look, we're issuing a command, and this Jesus thing has gone far enough. If you see him, we want him arrested, or tell us so we can arrest him. Then you've got him riding into Jerusalem. That doesn't work, so they get exasperated. Now Jesus comes into the temple, and now he's upsetting things and the money changers. So that now, th this is three times now that they have tried to quell this action by Jesus and the people. And so now this leads to, all right, then we now have to advance this idea of putting him to death. They've already, now remember, the Sanhedrin did not decide to put him to death. That was the Sadducees. Okay, the Sadducees made that point. All right, so he has not yet been sentenced, sentenced by a Sanhedrin or anything like that. But you can see how this is elevating now to the point of anger. Okay, but all accounts confirm the message that the attitude of the Pharisees, no matter how you read it, temple cleansing came before, temple cleansing came after. These accounts confirm the attitude of the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders that they can no longer stand idly by, because this is a danger to their way of life. So if at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't really matter whether there were two temple cleansings or their chronology, it doesn't matter. What is important is that the ire, the indignation of the Pharisees is now, and the Jewish leaders
On
is now.
caller.
All right. And then now in 20, verse 20, I think 20, let's see here. 20. 20. Ah, okay. So now let's go back to the text. We'll have Patty, do you have your Bible open?
Yes.
All right. So why don't you now take us?
Verse 20.
Yeah, just take us to through verse 23. Just through verse 23, 2023.
Okay. Now there were certain Greeks among those who came up to worship at the feast. Then they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip came and told Andrew, and in turn, Andrew and Philip told Jesus. But Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified.
All right.
Most assuredly, I say to you." Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and we'll stop there because that's going to be another section. All right.
Okay.
So now let's I hate to say it, let's pick this apart, but let's examine this now. All right. So let's make the tie-in from verse 19 to verse 20. Now let's tie these two things in together, because you'll see, remember what we said about John's gospel, is John's gospel is the gospel of irony. John loves irony, all right? And this is a classic case of irony, all right? Because what What did they, what was the concern, not the concern, what was the sticking point I had in verse 19? What did I point out?
The whole world
The
was
world,
at kind of him.
right? The world has gone after him. And it's like, well, wait a minute, world has gone after him. I thought he was affecting the Jewish nation and they were scared about the nation of Israel. Now, and what do you see in verse 20? Literally
Now
right after he says that,
the Greeks want to see him.
the Greeks want to see him. So this now ties in the Gentile world. Okay. So the Greeks, so John is now completing the verse 19. He's saying, all right, yes, the Jews are affected. They're following him. But now the world has gone after him because now the Greeks want to see him, who are considered the Gentiles. All right. Now, what's your question? What would be a possible question about verse 21? What's
I
all the
was
questions should come
wondering,
up there?
how did they know to go to Philip?
Take that even back further. What would be I mean, they want to see Jesus, right?
Oh, how did they hear about Jesus to even want to see him?
Even that, I'm sh you know, we can say that the Greeks have heard tales of him healing. They've got this Jewish witness of him raising someone from the dead. They've witnessing this great crowd watching this guy ride in on a colt, and they're waving banners at him. Okay, so all of that would entice them to want to see who this man is. But if he excites you that much, then what? You go to
Believe
him.
in him.
What are you going to Philip for, right? I want to see Jesus, right? Okay. You know, hey, and you know, isn't the, you know, isn't to some extent, isn't that the Protestant cry against the intercession of the saints? We want to see Jesus. We don't want to go to the saint. We don't need to go to the saints. We want to see Jesus, right? But no, the Greeks go to the apostles and they say, hey, Philip, we want to see this Jesus. Well, he's not hiding. He's out there in the open. I mean, look at Zacchaeus, right? I mean, Zacchaeus went, hey, he went up by the tree and Jesus invited him down, right? Or said, I'm going over to your house. All right. So the first thing is, why do you think that they're, why do you think the Greeks are not going directly to Jesus?
Was it similar to the centurion who, out of humility and knowledge of the Jewish law?
Right. Why is the, you know, I mean, you know, why is this rabbi going to see us? You know, who are we? I mean, I don't know. Can we go and see him? I mean, you know, not I'm saying he's a superstar, but, you know, there was probably hesitation on their part because, again, you know, Jesus has said, I am here for the nation of Israel, right? It's the Pharisees, right? It's the Pharisees now, and I'm gonna take this back later, but it's the Pharisees who said the world is going after him. So they're thinking, you know, potentially they're thinking to themselves, wait a minute now, is he going to accept us? Maybe we should find out from his disciples. All right. So
Could I
now,
say something?
yeah.
You went backwards, but I'm thinking forward in the Acts of the Apostles when Paul was evangelizing on Mars Hill. And what he said was that we know that you Greeks have gods, but you believe in a special God, an unknown God.
Right.
Yeah. And it was it could that not be part of their pagan tradition, but that they also have a glimpse of a Messiah that they want to pursue, perhaps.
Well, and as we move forward into the examination of who these Greeks are, then the answer to that question is yes. as we examine a little bit deeper into these Greeks, the answer to that question is yes. But for right now, so that is hindsight. But for right now, Jesus has been very explicit about the fact that he is here for the Jewish nation. Okay. There is an earlier statement, which we'll see a bit later, where he says in Mark that I am gathering together all nations. And in John, he said it in a very subtle and a very couched way, or in a very shadowy way, and we'll see that too. But that's the idea of the Greeks are not sure if this is their Messiah yet. And Benedict is right. St. Paul is the one who says, yes, this is your Messiah too. So, all right. Now, last question is, why? Okay, so now, verse 22. Philip went and told Andrew, and Andrew went to Philip, and then they told Jesus. All right. So it seems like they said to the Greeks, stay here. Let me go check this out. We're going to go talk to Jesus. We'll be back. We'll let you know what he said. Right. So why not just say, oh, yes, we know Jesus. Follow us and we'll take you to Jesus. But there seems to be this idea of that they went and that Philip went and said, hey, there's guys who want to see Jesus. What do you think? And then the two of them now go and they tell Jesus. So why do you think that is? Why didn't John just say, hey, come on, you Greeks, come with us and let me introduce you to Jesus?
Well, could it be the timing? Has time come for Christ, according to Christ? Christ,
Yes.
doesn't he say that is over? We're going into a new phase now.
Yes, but I want to tie it directly into the Gentiles. Tie it directly into the Gentiles here.
Because when Jesus sent the apostles out, they were told not to go to the Gentiles, but to the children of Israel. So
They were exactly right. So Jesus gave firm instructions to them. And why am I not finding this? He gave firm instructions to them and said, you are to go into the land of Israel. You are not to go among the Gentiles. So they remembered this. Okay. And so, as good disciples, all right, they want to check with Jesus first and they want to go and they want to say, hey, the Greek, he wants to. Want they want to meet you. What do you think? Is this okay? Because it is the master who needs to make that decision. They've received their orders, so they need him to make the decision about whether or not to see the Greeks. So that's exactly what that is. All
but
right.
didn't Christ go into the Decapolis? Christ himself went to the Decapolis.
Yeah, but that's Christ. Right. So Christ talked to the Samaritan woman too, and he told them don't go to the see the
Yes.
Samaritans either. So when you're the boss, you can do what you want. Where was I at here? All right. And then lastly, before we kind of do a deep dive here, all right. And again, here is so they go and they tell Jesus. And what does Jesus say?
He doesn't answer them in the way they expected, maybe.
Exactly. I mean, the answer is not yes, come and bring the Greeks to me. No, I don't want to talk to the Greeks now. So John is famous for doing this, is that and again, this is why the gospel is not a history book. Because it doesn't read like a history book. All right. Now, what's the point of this answer? And Panodea said it.
The timing is past that.
Exactly. So, what Jesus is saying is the fact that the Greeks have come and that the Gentiles now want to see me All nations are coming to me. This is my hour. So he's making a theological statement here. John's making the statement and saying it doesn't matter whether the Greeks see him or they don't see him. That it's not important to John. What's important to John is that the time has come. So
Oh,
with the
wow.
advance of the Greeks, all right, with the Gentiles entering into, Jesus's answer is he's because he's been saying all along what?
The time has not come.
The time has not come. The wedding, all of those things. You know, he said, this is not my hour. And now he says, this is my hour. So that's the answer that is important to the reader, not whether or not he talked to the Greeks or not.
Oh,
So, when,
wow.
so when you understand the gospel from that perspective, that the gospel is, that's why the gospel is there for our salvation. It's not a history book. Who cares what the Greeks said? What John wants his readers to know is when is this hour? This hour is what Jesus's mission of salvation was. It was to all nations, to all people. So that's what's coming here. That makes sense?
Wow. Yeah, I never would have connected him making that answer into the like the previous verses about, oh, the world is going after him, the Greeks coming, and then Jesus responding. And what I used to think was a very like, I'm like, oh, this doesn't, why is he saying this now? That
Right.
doesn't, he didn't give them a direct answer, but now it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
Yeah. Wow.
if I send Sarah out to go out and make a report, and then she comes back and she says, the Greeks came to Philip, then they went to Jesus, and then Jesus said this. I say, well, what? No, I just asked you to what happened. Give me a history account. So, all right, now let's
It
take a look.
seems to me that Jesus has a flow chart, as we used to say in school, and he was following that.
Would never have used that, but yes, okay. Being a project manager myself, I kind of like that, kind of a flow chart. If this happens, do X. If this does not happen, do Y. All right. True teacher or true program manager, one of the two. So, all right. So let's now, let's examine those, verses just a little bit. A little bit deeper then, and we're on. So we're on verse 20 there. All right. So in another example of John's use of irony, we talked about this. The approach of the Greeks to see Jesus immediately confirms what the Pharisees said. Look, the world has gone after him. So John's making that connection between the fear of the Pharisees, and the realization of that, or the manifestation of that fear, which is the approach of the Gentile world. Okay, so as a part of a greater Gentile world, the Greeks now represent or are representative of these first fruits of a world that would become to be included into Jesus's salvation of all nations. All right, so again, this is if you look down in the notes, that's Saint Cyril's commentary. I just picked that up from him. All right, so maybe just a little bit of background just to help us out. About the definition of these Greeks, maybe to kind of help us out. Who are these Greeks? Okay, so in the New Testament, we will find identified two versions or two types of Greeks. Okay, the one are the Hellenes or the Hellenes, and the other one is the Hellenistes. Okay, so there's a difference between these two. All right, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but not about the people, more about the culture. All right, so the Hellenes are when the Bible uses, when Scripture uses this, okay, Hellenes, they are talking about these are Greeks born Gentiles, some of which became Jewish proselytes or later Christian converts. All right. The Hellenistes are those Jews who spoke Greek. So they were the ones who came under this Greek influence. All right. And
Father, I'm sorry, but we have to, can we remember the role that Alexander the Great played with all of this? He Hellenized the world.
that's what I said down
And
there. As a result of Alexander forcibly settling in 1000 GE.
I'm sorry.
Nope, that's
I
what
didn't
Jesus.
see that.
But you're right on that. So that Hellenizing came from Alexander. All right. He wasn't the only influence, but he was a major influence. Okay. So in one case, we have Greeks born Greek, Gentile, and now looking to convert to the Jewish faith as proselytes. And this is who John's referring to now, because, and we'll see here just in a minute. Let me just save that for just a second. Okay. In the subcategory of the Hellenes who became proselytes, Judaism now recognized two types of proselytes, all right, which they referred to as, and you'll see this in the Mishnah. They talk about the proselyte of the gate and the proselyte of the covenant. All right, so these are for a Gentile conversion. So they were one of two people. All right, proselytes of the gate were those people who wanted to live among the Jews, but didn't want. They acknowledged the one God. Okay, very similar to kind of what Panarea was saying before about St. Paul saying, "I know the name of that unknown God," that they worship the one God. So they acknowledged the one true God, but they didn't want all of the adherence to the Jewish laws. So they didn't want circumcision, but they didn't want to follow the Torah dietary laws and all that, and they avoided idolatry. So they gave up their idols. They worshiped the one true God. Because they did not observe the Mosaic the laws, then they were not allowed to partake in the sacred festivals or the Passover. But and they're called the proselytes of the gate, because, and I'll show it to you right now, is because they, if you look at this diagram right here, all right, of the courtyard and the inner temple, the court of the Gentiles, they were not allowed beyond the beautiful gate. So because they stood at the gate, they were called the proselytes of the gate, because they weren't able to go any further. So this now, right down here in this area, is where the money changers were. All right. So this is why Jesus was not, the cleansing of the temple was not about the fact of that they were profaning the temple, because they were here. So they were outside of the actual temple area. What he was mad about was what?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry.
So when Jesus was cleansing the temple, this is the area where he was cleansing the temple, out here in the court of the Gentiles, all right? Before the people went into the actual temple area, all right? So what was Jesus' anger at? What was he angry at?
It made it a commercial money changers. It reduced it.
But there was a purpose there. The purpose was to take Gentile money and to convert it to Hebrew coinage. So there
And they
was
would
an idea.
cheat.
Yes, there you go. They were cheating, they were extorting, they were corrupt. That was the problem. Jesus did not have a problem with the changing of the money, because it was being done in the appropriate area. So there was no problem with that necessarily, but the fact that they were cheating and extorting, that's what caused the ruckus. But this is, like I said, so this is where these proselytes of the gate are. That's how they're observing these events that are going on, but because of who they but because they don't want to observe the Mosaic institutions, the laws, they are barred from being in the inside. As opposed to the proselytes of the covenant, these are ones who now want to adopt the Jewish religion, Judaism, completely. So they bound themselves to the Torah law, and that included circumcision. So they now were no different from the Jews in their culture and practice, except for the fact that they had not been born into it. All right. So Sarah, you would now be a proselyte of the covenant. All right. Because you are no longer standing outside the gate, but now you want to come inside the gate. All right. So.
officially on March 17th.
Officially
God
on
willing.
March 17th. That's
Yeah.
right. You will no longer
Yeah.
be a proselyte. All right.
On St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
And that's right, on St. Patrick's Day. So you must wear something green. All right.
It was just the foot I said. Well, I'm 6% Irish, so maybe
Oh,
it's
there you
supposed to
go. All
work out
right.
that way.
Okay. So,
Welcome,
great.
sister.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but I won't be able to change the communion wine to Irish whiskey. That we'll have to leave that to Jesus. I can't do that. All right.
There's no economia for that,
There's
so
no, as far as I know, there's no economia for that right
yeah.
now. I would appreciate that, but so again, so the Hellenes mentioned by John in verse 20 were these proselytes of the gate, Greeks by birth and the process of becoming Jews, but not currently allowed to partake in the eating of the Passover lamb or enter the temple areas. Their desire to adopt Judaism as full in its fullness is evident in John's use of the term anavenonton and proskynison. So let's just take a quick look at that just so that you can see that. All right. Then that's how the fathers glean that, all right, because it says here, yeah, here it is. Okay. Now, among those who went up, okay, and that went up 20 is this anavenonton. So anaveno is I go up, and they went up to worship. All right. So a proselyte of the gate may worship the God, but not in the Judaic sense. And there, this worship is right here. It's in this proskyniso scene. So that's how we know that these are Hellenes who want to convert to Judaism. All right, is just this beginning part was through those words that we know. All right, let's get back to this. Okay. All right, so that kind of identifies the Jews. Okay, so now 20 verse 21. All right. That's they came to Philip, who's from Bethlehem. Okay. So the Greeks approach one of Jesus' disciples. Their interest in Jesus may be due to the Greeks having witnessed the events of Jesus, as I mentioned. They've probably heard of his healings. They probably saw the cleansing of the temple. If in John, at least it occurred earlier. Okay, they probably would have at least, if not seen, they would have heard about the great miracle of the raising of Lazarus. Okay, and again, I just wanted to show kind of where that Court of the Gentiles was where these Greeks would have been. All right. Okay. As to why the Greeks did not go directly to Jesus, this could be due to their uncertainty about whether Jesus would receive Gentiles. We talked about that. And they approached Philip. Now, again, this comes from St. John Chrysostom and St. Cyril. They believe that Philip, being from Bethesda, is an area that has a heavy concentration of these Hellenes. All right. So he would be a little bit, at least the belief is that, hey, we're kind of from the same neighborhood. You already know us. So maybe you got a little bit more influence in kind of getting us an audience with Jesus. So that's their thought about it. No confirmation of that, but because Philip is from that same area, the thinking was that he might be a little bit, he might lean more to understanding them and getting them audience with Jesus. All right. And
Greeks
then they
do that
already,
all the time.
what's
Greeks
that?
do that all. I said Greeks still do that.
Still, you're right. Oh, look, that's right. Let me see where I can, where I can get it in. Who do I know? Right. So in 22, we also talked about, well, why didn't they just bring the Greeks along? And we said that Philip, again, remembering the command of his disciples, 5:26. So Matthew 10:5. I couldn't remember where that was, but that's why I put it in the notes there so we can remember that. So they want to ask Jesus first. All right. Farley points out the significance of this event in that the coming of the Gentiles to Jesus signals that his time in Israel is nearing its end and that the hour is now at hand for the Son of Man to be glorified. So, an excellent point there. And that's why I wanted to stress that point, because it helps us to understand, as I mentioned, Jesus's non-answer to Philip and Andrew's request. All right. So the coming of Jesus, the coming of the Gentiles fulfills Jesus's words at the cleansing of the temple, where he declared that my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations. We only find this, though, in Mark. So when we read the other accounts, we don't find that. It's only in Mark where we find this little tidbit here, where it says, my, sorry, it's on different pages here. My house shall be called a house of prayer. Now, the other ones talk about what? The other gospel readings talk about what? To include John. They at the cleansing of the temple, what do they focus on? That you shall not do what? So when, oh, so let's go see it. We said that's chapter 2. Cleansing of the temple. Okay. Right. So what's Jesus's focus in John?
Jesus, that God's house is a marketplace.
Exactly. Right. Stop making my father's house a marketplace. In Matthew, we read that he talks about you have made it into a den of robbers. All right. And in Mark, sorry, and so in Matthew, he talks about this den of robbers. In John, he talks about stop making my father's house a marketplace. In Luke, he says the same thing, but it's only in Mark that we get the rest of the story. All right. So when we go to Mark, what was that? What am I missing here? Ah, okay. So, and he was teaching and saying, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it into a den of robbers. In the other ones, we don't have this. We have you have turned my house into this. So he talks about the house, but it's only in John that we get this. It is for all nations, and that's what's going to come back to the reader in this reading of John, is that Jesus is here not just for the Jewish world, but he's here for everyone. So this is another great example where this is where the fathers of the church really help us, because we tend to read each book on its own. But what the fathers of the church do is they read the gospel in its totality, and they put the pieces together. Okay, I by myself reading John would not have remembered this, all right? But when you spend your entire life studying scripture and you see what John says, you know, about the Greeks, and now he says my time has come. Because you studied it, you remember what Mark said about the cleansing of the temple, where he said, oh yes, it was Jesus at that point said this was for all nations. So each disciple is giving you particular clues and into the full revelation of who Jesus Christ is. So we don't necessarily have all the fullness in one gospel. So we need all of them together, but the people that do that for us are the fathers of the church, right? So and that helps put that together. So what Farley's saying here, what is the, for him to realize the significance of the event, he has to be able to put those pieces together. And then through St. John Chrysostom and St. Gregory and St. Cyril and Clement, all that, we have people who have already done that. That's one of the reasons why we can't lose that witness, because they are the ones that help us put those pieces together. So, and also the approach of these men from outside of Judaism recalls what Jesus said of the scattered sheep. So now we can look back to chapter 10 in John, and now this enlightens us. Now, I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. Okay, now I get it. Oh, the fold is Israel. The other sheep do not belong to the nation of Israel, but I must bring them along, and they will listen to my voice. The Greeks want to see Jesus. There it is. There's the manifestation of that, of they will listen to my voice. The Greeks come, say, I want to see Jesus. Now, if they came to worship, then they are, we would imagine then that they're not just wanting to see the man, but they are wanting to see now, is this truly the Messiah that we now have come to believe in? All right. And so there will only be one body of Christ, and I will be their one shepherd. So now, so reading this before in chapter 10, maybe this didn't come out in its fullness to us. But now, reading this and seeing what Jesus is saying, now we can fill in the blanks and we can go, ah, I get it. Okay, I know what the fold is. I know who the other sheep are, and now I see how are they listening to my voice. Oh, I get it, because they came to the temple, the Passover, then to see me. All right, so we have both of those connections, the house of prayer for all nations, and then this also this idea of the sheep, the other sheep who did not belong to the fold of the nation of Israel. And so to close this, we'll stop right here. Lesson for today. In Philip's action, St. Cyril sees a lesson for us in that, and this applies, it is not well to speak in a careless fashion to those who are above us, even though the matter seems to be right and proper, but rather take counsel with wise friends as what ought to be done. Putting this in military language, do not jump rank until you have gone through the chain of command, okay? Because you could cause yourselves problems. All right. So sometimes we see something, we don't have the whole story, and we're like, okay, this is wrong. I've got to stop this. I'm going right to the top. Okay. And then what ends up happening is we get to the top, and then he or she says, well, if you would have known the whole story, you would have known this is why he or she did that. Oh, well, I guess so. And then you end up looking dumb. So see, even the fathers of church can give us not only lessons in the gospel, but also lessons that we can use in our daily lives at work. So that's kind of neat.
Timeless wisdom.
What's that?
Timeless wisdom.
That's right. Timeless wisdom. Exactly. Exactly. So, all right. So let's go ahead and stop there, because I'm looking at the clock there. Okay. What was 20? What was 2023? Okay, I just do those last two, because basically just these, because basically this is what we already talked about. There is no clear indication of text that Jesus' response was heard by both the disciples and the Greeks. However, the mentioning of the crowd standing there. So if you look in your if you look in your Bible, right, and you go to verse 29, all of a sudden it says in verse 29, wait a minute, 29, therefore the people who stood by and heard it. So there are people standing when Jesus is talking, there are people standing by. So at first glance, it seems like this conversation he's going to have seems to be just with his disciples. But then all of a sudden, in verse 29, it says, therefore, the people who stood by heard it. Okay, they were standing by. So maybe the Greeks did hear this. So we don't really know for sure, but at least the way that it's written gives us the idea that they could have been there. So as I've already said, Jesus's response is not a direct answer to their request, but more of the theological interpretation of the significance of the Greeks' presence, why they're there. As mentioned previously, the Greeks are the signal that Jesus's hour has come now for two things. One, he's going to talk about this in just a bit, to be lifted up and to be glorified as the Son of Man. And we've seen, if you go into if you go into the note 5:30 in John 1:51, 3:13, 3:14, he has said time and time again, when you see the Son of Man lifted up. So this is now like the fifth or sixth time we've heard him say that. Okay. All right. So what he's saying is, you've heard me saying that the Son of Man will be lifted up. Well, now it's coming. This is the hour. And in these verses, we have a triple repetition of the now. John really gives this emphasis, all right? Because if we look in verse, if we read along in verse 27, verse 27, where am I at here? 27. 27. Okay, so now. For this purpose I came. Now is the judgment of the world. Now the ruler of the world would be cast out. So we have this trip. We have, you know, like you hear, Amin, Amin, I say to you, right? When you hear that, you know you got to pay attention. All right. This is the same kind of idea. So this triple now for the purpose. Now the judgment of the world comes. Now the ruler will be of. Obviously, Satan be cast out. And in this, there is an echo of Jesus's words after he healed the paralytic at the pool. And this is what we hear in our funeral service, the Orthodox funeral service. The hour is coming, but is now when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God and those who hear it will live. Referring to those, in this case, referring to those who are now dead in their faith, but will recognize Christ after his death and resurrection and will be alive in him. So we use in the funeral service for the raising of the dead. The way it's being used now is that those who are dead in their faith, those who are in darkness, because John's used this motif of darkness many times. Those who are in darkness, at Jesus's resurrection, they will now have the light and recognize who he is, as the disciples will recognize that. So I wanted to stop at that point too, just because that now emphasis is also very, very strong in this.